You're listening to the Sound Girls podcast with our guest host, Austin, Texas chapter head, Willa Snow, and me, Becky Campbell from Florida. This episode features an interview with Caroline Losneck and April Tucker from the upcoming movie Living Sound, The Ethel Gabriel Story. You can find us on social media, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and our website, soundgirls.org. The spotlight guest interview today, Carolyn Losneck and Kristen Gelfin, are documentary filmmaking team in Portland, Maine. They've teamed up with Los Angeles-based producer April Tucker to make the film Living Sound, The Ethel Gabriel Story. They are working in collaboration with Sound Girls and Carrie Kies, director of Sound Girls. A little background about all three of these awesome people working on this project. Today we're talking to two of the three of them, April and Carolyn. Christoph Gelfand is the cinematographer, co-director, and co-producer, as well as editor. He is not able to join us today as he's taking care of his kids right now, but we want to talk to the other two of the team. April Tucker is the lead researcher and producer. She has worked in Los Angeles for 15 years in a variety of post-production audio roles: re-recording mixer, sound supervisor, sound editor, music film score mixer, music editor, ADR engineer, and Foley engineer. Her film work has been seen at major festivals such as Sundance, Cannes, South by Southwest, and Tribeca. She has been nominated for 3 Motion Picture Sound Editor Golden Reel Awards. Carolyn is the independent documentarian. She is the co-director and editor of the film. She is a radio podcast producer, installation artist, and filmmaker based in Portland, Maine. Her radio work has been featured on NPR, Marketplace, BBC, Maine Public Radio. Her documentary film work has been featured in the New York Times, Camden Film, International Film Festival, and other festivals. She has received Maine Arts Commission and Warhol Foundation Kindling Fund grants for her documentary work, and enjoys frequent collaborations with other artists, poets, and filmmakers. Living Sound, The Ethel Gabriel Story, is a featured-length documentary film that is in production now. It tells the previous untold story of Ethel Gabriel, who broke barriers throughout her sweeping career as one of the earliest women record producers for a major label. Gabriel's story has never been told until now, just as the music industry is starting to reflect on its own issues with inclusion and diversity. Despite obstacles such as sexism, financial ruin, and now memory loss, the film portrays how this remarkable woman and the music that she brought to life has persevered.
Here's this woman who'd been in the industry for over 40 years, and I had never heard of her, and my colleagues had never heard of her.
I was in the industry for years and years and years. I never thought, I'm just a girl.
She was the only woman in the A&R department at that time. She was shunted to the side, and she was far more competent than all the rest of the guys, including me.
Ethel Gabriel was in her role at RCA when recorded music and the quality of recorded music was more important to the culture than at any time before or since.
You look at pictures of Ethel, and she's the only woman in the room. I've certainly spent most of my career like that. Change takes a long time.
Everybody, welcome Caroline and April.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
Yeah, nice to be here. Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
So we're just kind of going to dive in. I kind of butchered your names, I think, there at the beginning. So sorry if you could just say your names for us again. I know April Tucker's an easy one, but sorry, Caroline. I think
My last name was a longer Polish name when my family members, you know, came to New York from Europe. And so they like just pulled out letters from a much longer name. my name's Caroline Losneck.
Caroline Losneck, and I called her Loose Neck, I think. So sorry about that. I heard your little giggle in the background. I'm like, I totally just butchered your name.
It's much cooler. I like Loose Neck.
Sorry about that. So let's talk about the Ethel Gabriel movie. How did you guys come? Where'd the idea come from? How did it come about? Let's start there.
So the documentary basically started because I have a blog where I just kind of write about random audio things. And one day, a couple years ago, I just went, I wonder who the earliest record producer was in female. I wonder who the earliest female record producer was, and I wonder who the earliest female recording engineer was. And I expected to find someone from, like, I don't know, 1950, maybe. Shocked to find that there were women in the industry even before 1900. But through looking up some names and starting to just research women for fun, I came across a mention of Ethel Gabriel. And when I started digging into it more, I went, wow, this, you know, this woman had a 40-year career at RCA, and I'd never heard of her.
Yeah.
So I actually found a newspaper article about her that I posted in the Sound Girls group, and it got just a ton of likes and comments, and people were like, wow, who is this woman? And Carrie, the executive director of Sound Girls, said, well, we need to go interview her. We need just, even if it's for historical purposes, we have to know more about her because she's still alive. She was, I think, 97 at the time. Mm. And so then Carrie said, well, I know exactly who we should have do it, and reached out to Caroline. And I'll let you tell your side, Caroline.
Carrie reached out to me, and I was actually taking a break. I was in Texas at the time doing some volunteer work, and Carrie reached out and was like, there's this woman who we need to document. She lives in, that April Tucker found. She lives in not too far from you, New York State. And I was like, well, Maine to New York's pretty far, but that's okay. I was immediately, I was interested in learning more. And I had met Carrie Kies. I can't remember what year, but it may have been 2016, when I produced a story for NPR about her work, her work as a live sound monitor engineer, and her starting Sound Girls. So through that, I sort of got to know Carrie, and kind of like always watched and admired Sound Girls, but never really, hadn't really done anything, I guess, directly with Sound Girls, but sort of always stayed in touch with Carrie. As soon as I got back to Maine, Christoph and I took our first visit, took a visit to meet Ethel. I think it was in March of 2019. We worked through her nephew, who is Ed Morrow and Nancy Morrow, who are the closest family members to Ethel.
Okay.
And they sort of arranged for a visit to the retirement home where Ethel lives now. It sort of started off as like, let's document this person. And then it turned into what we thought would be a short film. Mm-hmm. And then as the story started, you know how things go, the story started like opening up more and more. And April is, I don't know if you know this about April, but she's this like, among all the other things that you read off, Becky, she's like this incredible researcher. And like, you can send her like a shard, a little scrap of paper that has like words on it from some newspaper, and she finds like the information. So April was doing that with Ethel. Like, we would find a little shred of information, or somebody would mention something, and like April would uncover it. And like through that, we were kind of like, wow, this feels like a bigger story, and with a lot of interesting parts to it, and with like a lot of angles we could pursue. But it was kind of driven by, I think, April's curiosity and like intelligence and just like way of kind of framing things that were interesting to us, things to ask Ethel, things to find out, paths to follow, you know.
And some of, to add on to that, like, you know, there would be things where we found, say, you know, I found a Billboard magazine article from, you know, I just went through every single Billboard ever that had a mention of her name in it, and that's just a Google search, and a lot of it's just fancy Google searching. But you know, you might find like there's a picture of her from like the 1930s at Carnegie Hall, and then you know, there's a letter to the editor, you know, or you might find her name paired with someone else, and it'll be like, oh, you know, here's Ethel and you know, Elvis, or here's Ethel and someone else, and you kind of go, what's,
you know,
their
just Elvis. Yeah.
Well, that's, I mean, it's funny because Elvis is a name that's come up over and over and over again, but yet there's been challenges to finding out what her relationship was to Elvis, you know, because what she says today is one thing, and then what you find in the records is another thing.
Yeah.
And it's been interesting just to kind of try to figure out the story, like not even necessarily, you know, why did she do this and why did she do that, but just literally finding, you know, what did she do and what was her role at RCA, and that's where it's been fun to talk to her colleagues and her friends and the people who she just told things over the years about her career.
That's amazing. I was watching one of the clips of the movie that you guys have on the website, and different people that you'd interviewed, and it just got drew me in. I can't think of the right word this morning, but like it just totally drew me in because I was like, oh wow, you know, she's struggling in her older years, you know, to remember things. But then, you know, it shows this other guy in, you guys did a great job of someone, you know, voicing over what she was trying to come up with. And he was like, well, she told us he worked with this guy and that guy, you know, and I was like, man, that's awesome. And I'm totally excited to watch the movie. I can't wait about it. But, how long have you guys been in production now?
Well, that initial interview was March of 2019. Does that sound right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, March. Yeah. So what, a year and a half, I think?
Yeah, and really the way this has kind of evolved, because, you know, this is just, it's kind of guerrilla indie filmmaking, which, I mean, I'm learning about too, because, again, I'm usually on the post-production side. I'm usually coming in after everything's done, right? You know, they've locked pictures, they've done shooting stuff, and they're just like, clean this up. So it's been really interesting to be on the other side and just to learn some of the challenges that come up and just kind of taking things day by day. So, you know, started as that one interview with Ethel, and then we said, oh, look, there's, you know, here's someone in New York who worked with Ethel. Caroline's going to New York to visit family, so let's go interview him. Or AES, we went to AES last year, and they were amazing. They helped us out with giving us a space that we could set up cameras, and then, you know, we interviewed industry professionals, modern day professionals, people like Leslie Ann Jones, just to get their opinion on what they think of Ethel's career and the types of challenges that she faced. And it's interesting how a lot of us can kind of relate to her experiences, and we can even explain them, even though we've never met her.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's definitely become a common thread, is people who we've talked to. I mean, there's definitely people that she mentored who we've been able to meet, including, you know, like Doe Phillips, who sort of produced her first record with Ethel's assistance, and it was a rap that was really quirky and fun, and you'll see it in the movie, I'm sure.
Neat.
Called Mr. Ed Raps. Features a horse and rapping, and but then so there's people who she directly mentored, but like April said, it's like a lot of people who we've interviewed who haven't met Ethel, and they're separated by what, you know, however many decades, they relate to, they say some of the challenges sound quite similar. Some of the issues that Ethel encountered, you know, wow, that's not too very different than what's happening today.
When you say issues, do you mean like social issues?
Yeah, I think we're talking about, you know, what is the statistic, the UC Annenberg study that came out about, you know, is it 2% of all producers are women? And, you know, maybe there's some, maybe that's a little bit different than it is, but it's not too, that's not unlike when Ethel was a producer. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, maybe the needle hasn't moved as much as we think it has, even though there's a lot of people working on this. I think that's become sort of the, at first we thought that there would be a lot of maybe like information like the studies in the film itself, but the more we sort of started to rein in our story, we sort of decided maybe it's more of the lens through which we're making the movie, but it may not need to be in there, because people who will watch it will still understand the context. So we're sort of navigating through, you know, the way in which we'll convey that kind of stuff.
Sure.
Because we are making the movie in the context of a lot of social change, you know, there's a lot going on right now that's informing how we are working and, you know, talking to subjects and characters and the relationships we have. So it's exciting. I think it's good.
that was kind of my next question with, and in the middle of doing a documentary and with all the social stuff that's changing around us and things that are starting to break through, you know, and Just exactly what you were saying. Like, does that change like a launch date for you guys, or are you just kind of like, it, like you don't have a launch date and now you're just like, oh no, like what do we do now? And like, do you have that, or are you still just gathering a lot of information?
That's a great question. We have, we've started to frame it like we're moving forward, like April said, sort of sometimes in a DIY fashion and guerrilla filmmaking and making adaptations as we need to for remote interviewing and using the downtime that was provided by the pandemic to, you know, apply for grants or connect with sure. characters and kind of do deeper, spend deeper, more focused time with our subject material. But we think we'd like to launch the movie in time for Ethel Gabriel's 100th birthday, and which is in November of 2021.
Awesome.
One of the things about filmmaking, too, I mean, I love documentaries, and I think one of the things that makes interesting documentaries when it takes a twist that you don't expect, right?
Yeah.
Like that they're just filming and something happens that completely changes what they think the film was going to be about. And I think that for us, you know, just the pandemic and the kinds of things that are happening right now. I mean, we were even having this discussion earlier this year when the Recording Academy was having discussion about diversity and inclusion. So, I mean, I feel like that aspect has, it's always been something we knew would be in the film to talk mm-hmm. about diversity and the challenges that Ethel faced as a woman. But, you know, I think that's part of what's going to make it interesting is we don't even know necessarily yet all the details of the film because it hasn't happened yet.
Right.
And one thing I was going to add too, it's like if you look back at there are actual mentions of her in industry publications as quote, the A&R lady. Like she literally was the only one. And back then,
wow.
And back then she A&R and record producing was combined. Like even if you read, Al Schmidt's, biography, which is a really good read. He talks about how, you know, when he first started, at Capitol, that he was responsible for doing both of those roles, A&R and record producing. And so over the years, those two jobs spread apart, which actually makes it even more amazing that Ethel was basically doing what's the job of like three or four people now.
Right. And at a time when no other women were doing it at all.
Yes, exactly.
Have you guys dove into the part of her, you know, like what made her do that as a female during that time? Is that part of like your discussion?
Oh yeah, like all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like that to me, like back then, you know, like she's my grandmother's age, you know, and I'm like, my grandma was also like that. So she drove a logging truck up in Upper Michigan. And back at that time, like how, I remember asking her, you know, how in the world did you even get into that? Like, were you allowed to? Because, you know, women weren't allowed to do anything. So, like, she remembers when women were allowed to vote, you know? So I'm like, wow, like, that stuff blows my mind.
It's funny. There's a lot of similarities to what's going on literally today. Because I think that, you know, I think for all of our grandparents, they probably went through things in the 1920s, 30s, 40s that really shaped who they are and it shaped our culture. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we're kind of in a similar space right now where it's like, you find someone who's out of work and, you know, if they're not doing live sound, they're going to go work for Amazon. And that's just doing your part, is doing what you need to do. And I have a feeling that for us, this is going to shape our future. And, you know, when we're back, for the people who aren't working, you'll be back on the job and be like, this is not that hard because I spent a year not working. Right.
Right. Yeah.
And I kind of feel, I see a lot of that in Ethel where it's like these life things that she experienced early on, just kind of shaped the culture that she grew up in. Mm. And that maybe changed some of those attitudes too about like, oh, women do this or they don't do that. There's more to it, but
yeah,
that's
sure.
definitely.
Is there a specific element that you can kind of allude to right now in terms of like, what is an example of a defining moment for her that you're allowed to talk about before it comes out?
I'm looking at Caroline.
I mean, one of the things I've been thinking a lot about and talked to Leslie Ann Jones about a bit when we interviewed her was that Ethel came from a musical background. She played trombone. That's okay to say, right, April?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right. And she So she came up through music, and I think April uncovered some information where she wanted to enter school for forestry, but they didn't have a forestry program. And she always, something that she repeats now in her older age is that she said, I was my father's last chance at having a boy, and he treated me like one. And for somebody with, at an older age with maybe some memory issues, definitely some memory issues, to repeat something, it means it's probably really meaningful to her. So, yeah. like, she talks a lot about having opportunities through her father, through tagging along with her father. And that was something that I think, you know, Leslie Ann Jones was sort of interested in that part of Ethel's story, and so are we. And then playing trombone, I think she, you know, she played trombone. She had her own, she played for World War II soldiers at some point. She had her own band, which was called, what, April?
I'm not sure if it's E-N or I-N, and her Royal Men. But it's a band that she put together. Like, this was, I think, the 1930s. Yeah. She's like, I'm going to have a big, like, basically a big band, and I'm going to conduct it. The story about the forestry, it was that her dad encouraged her, said, you know, you should go get a, go to college and study forestry, but the program at the time didn't allow women. So that's why she pivoted into music. Which, again, in the 1930s, you're going, okay, this woman's looking to pivot from forestry to music. Like,
I mean,
you know?
Even now that there's just no, like, real connection between the two fields of study. So it's just such a departure, really. Yeah. Unless you want to get, like, really hippie with it, which we could probably find something in the cosmic realm. But, you know, like, yeah, that's so, those are so vastly different fields of study and interest.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So it seemed like every step of the way, Ethel was sort of able to do things that were different than what other women at the time were doing. And she was able to kind of hang with it and just follow her passion, basically, which I think was music. I mean, I think a lot of it was music driven. I think that's of interest to us, too, is just this, the music that she maybe played as a trombonist and then like leading all the way up to this incredibly diverse and varied body of music that she produced, which ranges from, like, you know, like I said, rap to a series called Living Strings, which is crazy and worth looking into and spending time with. She produced, April could talk more about everything she produced, but she has a huge body of musical, it seems like, musical interests and tastes that she would tap into. And that's kind of become part of the movie, too, is like, what, you know, what were the feelings and moods that she was tapping into during the times when she was producing? So, like, some of the stuff might sound cheesy or dated to us, but it's, you know, at the time it came out, maybe it was super relevant.
Yeah. How many records did you find out that she produced? Do you know the total count?
So it's funny because Ethel herself said it was, and we found her old CV, and it said 2,500 records. And then after talking to the Sony Archives, who's been helping us, they said they think it's more like 5,000.
But there's also crap.
There's 5, also 000? Some challenge. The challenge, though, is it's some of it's, you know, trying to figure out, is it a re-release? Was there a mono and a stereo release? Was it you know, a single? And that's where I don't even know if we would even be able to find out definitively, but Sony was saying that she absolutely did it. They thought 5,000 original recordings.
I'm blown away by that number right now. I don't even know what to say. That's a lot.
That's just over 13 recordings per day in a year. So just in case anybody was wondering, like, if she were to do all of that in 1 year, I'm just like,
Willa just busted out the math.
One year. I mean, like,
I think the reissues were definitely, you know, like the reissues and stereo and mono were part of that, you know.
But in the 60s, she had to have been flying to England 7 or 8 times a year to do recordings. Which, you think about it, I mean, that's the 60s. It's like the beginning of the planes that could actually, you know, like really get you over there quickly. I mean, she was a hustler. I mean, she worked so hard.
Wow. I'm so excited about this movie. I really am. I'm like, everybody needs to go on the website. What is it? What's the name of the website? I forgot.
EthelGabriel.com, DOC.
Okay. And you can go on soundgirls.org and look at the Ethel Gabriel page there and everything. There are several scholarships. I know Leslie Ann Jones has scholarship available. Soundgirls has scholarship available, all in honor of Ethel Gabriel. Those are actually like active right now to apply for those scholarships. So I just kind of want to do a little segue there and make sure everybody knows those are open until July 30th to sign up and get your applications in for all of these scholarships in honor of Ethel Gabriel. And how awesome, you know, that we could give back to the younger generation and stand on Ethel's shoulders still. You know, she definitely is a forerunner for all of us. And I'm speechless at the same time of as I am like in awe of just her career and what she did. And I can't wait to find out more about her. Any other fun facts about Ethel you guys want to share without giving anyway too many spoilers here?
Let's see. Oh yeah, I got a whole list.
Let's do it.
She was the first woman to receive a RIAA gold record as a record producer. That was 1959. She earned a Grammy. She was the first woman in the historical recording category to win.
Oh wow.
And that was in 82 or 83. She took the, and this is all stuff, you know, public information. This is nothing, you know, not giving anything really proprietary yet. The Camden record label, which she was the kind of the head of, they handed her this record label that was kind of really struggling, and she turned it into this like almost going to die record label into a multi-million dollar label.
Wow!
And that was like multi-millions in the '60s.
That's a lot.
Oh, and so, and then she also, she has 15 gold records, which means sold over 10 million records during her career. But the thing is, some of those records since then have gone platinum or diamond. And one of them is Elvis's, was it Burning Love?
Holy cow. Wow.
Which is like one of the best. And it's not that she, that one she didn't record in the studio, but she did the repackaging of it for them to do the album release. Then that's the other interesting thing about Ethel. She was in the studio with artists. She was also doing these like best of repackaging albums. So she really like, she worked with everybody. If you were an artist on RCA between the 50s and the early 80s, she probably worked on something that they did in some capacity.
Wow. Well, even in like the 70s and 80s, I mean, maybe earlier than that, you would know this, but the best ofs and the, you know, essential albums and all that became huge. Like in probably what, the mid 70s, they started kicking off, and all through the 80s, like I remember 8 tracks and albums. I'm that old. And my dad having like an essentials of somebody, I don't even remember who, but on an 8-track, you know, where it was like all shaded on the front and you could barely see what it was. But I remember it saying essential of somebody, and it was all the compilations of all their greatest number one hits, maybe like Glenn Campbell or somebody, you know, way back then. But, so she worked on most of those is what you're saying. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's amazing. Like, if you go into a record store, the next time you can go into a record store, just look through the used records, find the RCA ones, and see if you can find her name on any.
Yeah.
And if you find one, take a picture and send it to us. You know, we love seeing those.
We do. It's been a very fun part of the discovery process for me personally, is going into record stores around the country wherever I am working or visiting, and picking up a record that has the Camden name on it, Camden RCA, and turning it over and being like, oh, wow, Ethel Gabriel, and then checking. And it's like, oh, no, we didn't have record that's a record she produced. So my collection, which I could show you, but it's kind of a mess right now, is growing of all this. Ethel's music is all around us still. You know, it's out there, and it's being, I'm not going to say who, but people in modern times have remixed it too, which is exciting. You know, like there's some modern rap songs, for instance, out there that have sampled Ethel's stuff.
Did she cross?
But I find really interesting.
Did she cross over just like every genre of music also?
Pretty much. I mean, just offhand, I can think of country or country rock, kids music. She did that rap album.
Disco.
Disco, yeah, yes. She did one of the first RCA's disco records.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Jazz that was her thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have a ton of boxes of records I'm going to start going through now and see if I can find.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll take pictures and send them to you.
I was just, before you called us, I was listening to, it's like a 1969 it's either Living Strings or Living Voices, which was, singers singing What a Wonderful World. And it's a very cheesy version of What a Wonderful World, but I love it. It's like... But she's also, what's the soul line, April? Soul Finders?
Soul Finders, yeah.
So there's like this, Soul Man and other kind of soul stuff. So she does, if you want to tap into her collection, it's worth it because there's a lot of variation.
Yeah, I love that. I love researching old music and listening to old records and finding, where stuff originated from too. There's a lot that I've stumbled on just doing that where I'm like, oh, so that's a remake. Like I didn't realize, they've remade that four times by now, and a lot of times you don't realize, or that's a sample from, oh shoot, that song back in the 60s, it's kind of neat to discover that and see how artistry just lives, generation after generation and grows.
Mm-hmm. What's funny is even though the music lives on, and this is relevant today too, the documentation does not. If you're in a session today, you're not thinking about, oh, I want to take pictures in case someone is going to make a documentary about this in 50 years, right? Or today we aren't even necessarily keeping track of what day did the singer record overdubs, right? Mm. But they have some of that information from Ethel's era, but we aren't thinking in terms of documenting anything other than the music. Hmm. And if you think about it, I mean, in theory, any of us could be asked about an artist that we work with today in 20 years or 40 mm-hmm. years.
Yeah.
But like, we just aren't, we're just thinking about doing our job from day to day and not about what would someone want to ask us about.
That's a really good point, April.
That might be one of the best endorsements for selfie culture I've ever heard. So, y'all, if you take pictures, make sure you take them constantly because you never know. Someone just might make a documentary about you in 50 years.
Right?
Yeah, all documentaries' primary sources will be Instagram in 20 years.
Yeah, it's true.
Or Zoom calls. Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing for me about the archival parts of our film is, we've been fortunate enough to have access to Sony archives. And Ethel's really beautiful personal archives that her family has shared with us, so it has like photographs and some signed photographs and awards she received maybe, or groups that she became involved with later in her career, including like Women Make Music?
Yeah, Women Make Music.
We were thinking a lot about the archives as we're sifting around is like, she's not in every... Even though her handwriting in session notes, may appear, and April found some of the things in the Sony stacks, there's a lot that's missing. Mm-hmm. And I think about that a lot is like one of the maybe bigger goals of our film is to sort of rewrite her into the archives, or like rewrite her storyline and her meaning and her incredible work into the archive, so that somebody looking back on the film, will be able to say like, this is Ethel Gabriel's archive. And it also makes me think a lot about, people who are systematically left out of archives. Women, I think women of color, black women, people of color. So I feel like we're thinking a lot about those kind of things as we move through the movie and, not treating the archives as truth or as neutral. Like, we know that maybe the same people who were making all the music, white cis men, were also responsible for the archives. So they're kind of just as susceptible to systems that exclude people as music. So that's been an interesting thing for me,
Does this kind of make you guys want to keep digging and find out who else might have been left out, or have you run across other people?
We've talked a lot. We talk about this, April?
This is kind of an ongoing thing. And it's interesting because RCA did actually, I don't want to reveal too much, but RCA actually had a surprisingly diverse A&R and recording department in the late 40s and 50s, like way more so than you would expect. But the other thing too is, like, back in that era, you know, the producers, like pre-1960s, we'll say, the producer's name wasn't even on the album, right? And they're just going to work every day, you know, and I'm not that they don't care about it, but they aren't thinking about seeing their name on their product. So, you know, that's a question we're asking, is how much is lost just because, you know, because the name wasn't on the record, and right. How much is lost because you have someone doing all the hard work who just doesn't need to be recognized for their work. And I think that's something that's relevant today, that, you know, if you have a crew of however many people and your assistant's name doesn't get on the liner notes, that person might feel like, oh, it's okay, it's not a big deal. But if that's what really helps propel your career and shows that your history, so it shows you as part of being part of the history, whether it's for someone looking down the road or whether it's to find a job 5 years from now, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think we all kind of have to be aware of our own presence. I'm trying to think of how to say this without coming across like me, you know, it's not about me. It's more just about, it's important to be remembered for the work that we actually did, if that makes sense. Yeah. And I feel like that's part of the diversity thing too, is just making it known that you were in the room and that you did your part.
Yeah. I feel like our movie might come out at a time when hopefully there's lots and lots of stories like Ethel's. None, they're all unique in their own way and they're all worth telling. And so, like, it gives me hope to sort of see, you know, people getting inspired and saying, you know, something like, I have the same story in film, and here's the person, you know, who was like there in every industry. You could probably say these are the people who were written out of the storyline. And now is a good time to sort of crack open the the storyline and say, like, these people did amazing stuff. And, you know, Ethel happened to produce 5,000 recordings. Even if she didn't do that, her career would have been incredible. Like with the other stuff she achieved. So it's, you know.
Well, that's awesome. That's kind of all the time we have, but is there anything to wrap up that you guys want to encourage other people? Like you were saying, obviously make sure people are in the liner notes, things like that. But maybe some other sound girls want to take on a project like what you're doing. You know, is there anything you can encourage them with? Or
well, that's actually a great question. I mean, I feel like just it is so much fun looking up these women. I mean, it really is like, I don't know, opening an old birthday present that was given to someone else a long time ago. I don't really know how else to say it. But yeah, I mean, if anyone's interested in doing research, reach out to me or just start trying to do it. Just search, look on Wikipedia. There's actually a project on Wikipedia that Sound Girls has been involved with to try to write more women in sound to have Wikipedia pages. And that's the type of thing that the more effort that we put in to tell these people's stories, the more that other people can find those stories. And a film is like a large scale way of doing it, but Wikipedia is a small way. Or even just for your own interest, you know, look someone up, write about it, put it on your blog, write about it for Sound Girls. Like there's ways to get information out about these people who had interesting, amazing careers that, like there's names from RCA that literally have gone into the ether of the internet, never to be found again, if it weren't for, you know, someone coming along and reading the article and going, oh, they need a Wikipedia page and making it, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, I would say in general about creative projects, in addition to what April said about everything, is like, for me, it's always like projects just start. Like, I always like young people who I meet with or people who I interact with are like, how do you do that? And I'm like, I just start. Like, I sit down one day and make any forward progress. Maybe you buy a new cell phone and you're going to shoot it on your cell phone. That's awesome. Do that. There's an incredible place for that kind of recording. Like, you don't need all the fancy gear. You don't need necessarily all the training. You probably have a lot of the tools already that will make your project unique to you. And it's probably worth telling. So I always say to young people or people starting out in kind of creative endeavors to just start, like sit your butt in the chair for a second and start.
Yeah.
And it'll move you forward.
Yeah. And follow your curiosity and your interest. I mean, because that's really this whole film has come about. The last year and a half has been driven by curiosity, you know?
Yeah.
And finding other people who share that interest who can keep you going. Because if there's days that just like, oh, I really don't want to look this up, and Caroline texts me something about, you know, hey, I just found this thing. It's like, whoa, I'm suddenly really excited to do it again. And, to, you know, having the right team of people can really help keep that that going.
That's a good point, is like, I think that among the like April, Christoph, and I, we all have different strengths and weaknesses. And that's been a really big advantage to our team, is like, April's this incredible researcher. Christoph and I sort of go on emotion and feeling. Like, it's this good combination. And Christoph's this brilliant cinematographer, and we trust him, and like, he gets these amazing shots, and you know, so it's like we all kind of snap together in a nice way.
I do have to give a shout out to him since he wasn't here. I mean, he has been absolutely amazing through this process, and you know, shooting everything and lugging all the gear, and just it looks phenomenal. It sounds phenomenal. Like I had no idea that I mean, this, because I don't do production, I had no idea that there are camera people out there who really know how to do sound. And he's absolutely one of those people.
Yeah.
Just the little parts that I've seen, the little trailer and everything, sound and look amazing. And I can't wait to see the finished product. I'm excited about it already. So Sound Girls, go on the website, check out all the things about Ethel Gabriel. And this movie is coming out next year. This documentary is next year. Are there any ways we can help you guys promote it, push it forward? What can we do?
Yeah. I think, following us on social, one thing that we are looking for support, like, we were supposed to have a Kickstarter campaign earlier this year, and we decided to put it on hold just because there's so many people in need right now. Like, you know, that we just didn't feel like it was the right time, but we do, we can take donations, and it would be going towards, gear that we could send to people to do interviews so we can do it more safely.
Okay.
Or travel, so that once we do start production. And I do also have to give a huge shout out to Carrie and Sound Girls, because they really did, Carrie's been amazing at helping, connect with people. Like, we've put out some posts on the Sound Girls group about, hey, we need this person or that person. Can someone help us assist on a shoot? Can somebody, found an amazing music supervisor? So just people who want to offer their services too, where we absolutely, you know, we'll take people up on that where we need it.
We're part of the Women Make Movies production assistance program, which they have a website. If you just Google Women Make Movies, and you can search for Living Sound, the movie, and through that you can make real, like, monetary donations if you're so inclined, but there's no pressure to do that. But it is part of that program. So
cool. Do we just reach out to you on the Ethel Gabriel site? Is that the best place to email you from or to?
That's right. That's the easiest, and I can send you some stuff for the show notes too.
Okay, great. We'll put the links in the show notes, and I'm so excited about this, you guys. Thank you so much for all your hard work and for sharing Ethel with all of us. And thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely.
Thank you so much for joining us today on the Sound Girls podcast, resonating beyond sound. Join us next week, where we will interview another awesome sound human and just dive in more with you guys. Hope you have a wonderful week.